Welcome, everyone, to our online Easter services. If you're joining us from Eggfest for the first time, we want to send you our warmest greetings. It's great to be able to connect with you. But we couldn't be more excited at Christ Church after a long summer under lockdown where we weren't able to meet in person, and after a long winter where so many of our people were away. We are starting to get this feeling that getting back to normal is getting closer. The spring weather has started to blossom with fresh air to fill our lungs. The snow piles have melted. My wife, Amy, sent me a picture of a small tomato plant that has started to sprout, waiting patiently as we prepare to make a home for it outside. And in the midst of all of this, more and more people have access to the vaccine in our church family. That means we can now start to imagine what it might look like to have more normal services again. That means my dad can maybe fly out to see his grandchildren, whom he hasn't seen in a year. And maybe for you, that'll mean going to parties again, enjoying the side conversations you had at the office, or taking that family trip that you had to delay. Normal sounds kind of good right now. But normal isn't always good, is it? Maybe your normal pre-pandemic was going home to a spouse that didn't love you anymore. Maybe your normal was being bullied at work, or maybe your normal was feeling alone. Even when our normal isn't bad, normal doesn't always carry the sense of newness, excitement, or adventure that we long for. There's a reason that repetitive jobs have such a high turnover rate. As good as normal can feel after a season of disruption, it doesn't take long to realize that normal is not enough. It inevitably leaves us hungry for something more, a new perspective on life, an irreplaceable peace, an unquenchable hope, something closer than a friend. But what if we missed our shot at it? A couple of summers ago, I was standing out on my deck looking at the Sauhegan River, which takes a sharp right turn in the back of our house. When the water is low, the rocks of the river protrude enough at one point that if you're a careful human or a curious bear, you can walk right across without getting wet. Well, a bear had just made its way across the river, and I was staring amazed at a photo that my neighbors had taken and shared with me. The only problem? I had missed it by seconds. And by the time that I got out on the deck to see what all the buzz was about, our furry friend had made his way off into the woods. Is it possible that we could seize the opportunity for something beautiful, new, and exciting before the moment passes us by? An experience that could capture our imagination and change the course of our lives for the better. Is it possible that moment is now? Whether you're a grandparent eager to reconnect with grandchildren, an employee getting ready to go back to the office, or a student looking forward to your school reopening more. What we're going to talk about today is important. That's because as good as normal can be, we might miss the opportunity to have better connections with people, have better experiences in groups, and be a better person in the midst of them. For you, the world's reopening could be a chance to start fresh. Which brings us to today, to Easter. Is there something in the Easter story that could deliver on our desire for more? That's the question I want to consider with you today. Well, it turns out that we aren't the first people to wonder about the future after a serious disruption. In the wake of Jesus' death on the cross, his disciples were overwhelmed by the sting of losing someone who loved them as they had never been loved. They were in a city they weren't all that familiar with, fearing that the same thing that happened to Jesus might happen to them. Some of them were feeling ashamed that they didn't stand up. And yet underneath the shame and the unimaginable pain of losing Jesus was something else, disappointment. There were tax collectors that walked away from their booths to follow Jesus, fishermen that left their boats and businesses behind to do the same. 3 years of their life had been devoted to following him. I imagine as the reality of Jesus' death started to sink in, one of the disciples, like Peter, might have said, maybe it's time to go back and get on the boat again. Well, they'd left everything to follow Jesus. Sure, it took some time. Some of Jesus' teachings like love your enemy, forgive 70 times 7, and turn the other cheek seemed extreme at first. They didn't know whether they could live that out at first or even if they wanted to. But after a while of watching Jesus live it out, the vision Jesus had for them started to make sense. As convention-defying and risky as that kind of life was, it seemed too good not to consider. And Jesus promised that he would bring about a world where it would all make sense. Now he was gone. Where would they go? What were they supposed to do? Going back to normal may not be dynamic, adventurous, and beautiful. Sometimes it might not even be good. But sometimes going back to normal is the most comfortable thing we can do. Well, that's where we find our disciples when we first encounter them after Jesus' death in Luke chapter 24. But notice as we read this text, giving them a possible way forward, that they are still inclined to resist. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He's not here, he's risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee? The Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again." Then they remembered his words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed to them like nonsense. Who would have thought that the disciples would be the first skeptics? The women at the grave came looking for a dead body and found a stone that had been moved instead. It took two angels to remind them that Jesus himself predicted that he would die and rise on the third day. Why would they overlook such a wild claim when Jesus had performed so many miracles before, even raising the dead himself? The women rushed back to tell the other disciples what had happened, but the remaining disciples had just as hard of a time believing their story. "Nonsense," they said. But how could they too overlook Jesus' prediction when they had seen him do so many powerful things? A statistic that we've brought up from time to time is the fact that one of the greatest predictors of success in life is the zip code you have been born into. It's come up in conversations about social dynamics between different groups of people. But I've thought about that a lot in a different context lately. Why is it so rare for people to break the zip code barrier when there is something better, even if they are fully capable of doing so? Several years ago, I was walking with a longtime friend. We'd been friends longer than I can remember and had been able to maintain that friendship throughout the years. We both grew up in the same small town that was located between a rock and nowhere. After all those years, he hadn't changed much, and I knew him pretty well. It turns out that I wasn't the only one who knew him. After getting out of the military, he was working at a local high-volume farm. The hours were early. He had to get up at 3 a.m. to make it to work on time. The work was hard. He was in his mid-30s, but he talked about his body aches like he was much older. Some of his coworkers really got on his nerves, and the pay wasn't great. He eventually worked up the courage to go to another local farm. He sat down with the employer and got a better offer with better working conditions. My friend gladly accepted the offer and went back to his current employer to inform him about his decision. But his boss didn't want to see him go. He offered him a slight raise. It wasn't as much as the other company was offering. And he couldn't offer a better environment or any of the other promises that came with the other offer. But his current boss had an ace up his sleeve. He knew what I'd known for over 30 years, and he used it to his advantage. "Fred," he said to my friend, "you don't like change." And that was right. My friend loved routine. That and the promise of a little extra cash was enough to make him stay. Now, there's nothing wrong with staying in the same town you grew up in or staying at the same job forever. Sometimes there can be something commendable and beautiful about that. But when there is an opportunity for something different that's better, why does it seem like so many people don't take the chance? The disciples believed in miracles. They trusted that God could do extraordinary things. They saw Jesus heal the blind, cast out demons, and yes, even raise the dead. They even believed that God would someday raise all of the dead before transforming the heavens and the earth to their eternal state. But for some reason, the timing of Jesus' resurrection created a cognitive dissonance. Yes, occasionally a prophet would come along and God would grant them the ability to raise someone from the dead, like the prophet Elijah. But those people would eventually return to the grave. God raising Jesus permanently in the present time? Apparently they thought that idea was going a little bit too far. So perhaps when they heard Jesus say that he would die and be raised on the third day, they thought Jesus was speaking metaphorically about the number, like when he talked about forgiving someone 70 times 7. The resurrection of Jesus was something that they could accept, but it wasn't something that they could believe. That's because when we face something strange, it's much easier to go with what we know. Last week, a fascinating article came out in The Atlantic entitled "Where Science and Miracles Meet" by the American physicist and self-described atheist Alan Lightman. Lightman describes a chasm between people of faith and the majority of scientists, whom he claims firmly and unequivocally reject anything supernatural as an answer to mysterious phenomena, insisting on a logical, rational, natural explanation instead. And now, some of the greatest scientists of all time believed in God. Einstein was Jewish and frequently talked of his faith. A more recent example is the head of the Human Genome Project, Francis Collins, who has spoken extensively of the way science is compatible with faith. But the truth is, a lot of scientists do refuse miraculous answers to the mysteries of the universe. What's fascinating about the article is that Lightman points to an area where the chasm between some scientists and believers might not be so great. In the 1960s, scientists first noticed what has become known as the fine-tuning problem in the universe. They observed that many of the constants of nature, such as the speed of light, lie within a narrow range for life to be able to exist. For instance, if the strength of the nuclear force of the Big Bang had been a bit greater, all of the hydrogen atoms would have bound to form helium, leaving no hydrogen remaining to form water. If it had been a little too weak, oxygen and carbon wouldn't have been able to hold together either. It's a simple problem of probability. A universe that can sustain life is very unlikely. Christian academics like philosopher Alvin Plantinga have pointed to this and made a case for intelligent design, but Lightman points out that scientists have gravitated toward the theory of the multiverse, which has been popular in science fiction and comic books for a long time. The theory addresses the problem of the probability of life in our universe by positing that there are multiple universes that exist. That naturally increases the chance that the conditions for life would be found in at least one. Now, full confession, I don't fully understand the multiverse theory, and it sounds like there's some interesting mathematics that physicists use to provide a rational basis for it. It's even possible that both answers could be true, intelligent design and the multiverse. I don't know. Where Lightman sees a connection between people of faith and scientists is and the theory's inability to be tested. It's not falsifiable. It lies outside the understanding of regular science. In a way, it's a matter of faith. But I think that there's something more to this, too. A scientist's willingness to fill the fine-tuning problem with the multiverse and a believer's willingness to fill it with God shows that whether we believe in the supernatural or not, we like answers that fit into our worldview. And we tend to stick with them and go back to them instead of raising new kinds of questions. We prefer to go with what we know. I suppose that's why we see girlfriends that keep going back to boyfriends who don't treat them that well. There is comfort in what they know. And maybe for you, you keep going in the same job, the same place or the same reality because there is comfort in what you know, even if there is something better beyond. Maybe you've toyed with going back to school or making a move that would be better for your family, But you pulled back because imagining different is so difficult. But as important as career and family decisions can be, that's not what we're really talking about today. And that's not what the disciples were facing. It was something bigger. It was a life decision that impacted everything else. The way they did business, the way they loved their spouses, the way they raised their children, and even the way they looked at the entire world. When the cross went up, the disciples' world came crashing down. They couldn't think of a future like they'd imagined with Jesus anymore. And the idea of Jesus' resurrection to them was nonsense. The most comfortable option for them was to take care of Jesus' body and look for ways to go back to normal. And chances are in this season of disruption that would be good enough for most of us too. But maybe we are looking for the wrong thing when we're looking for normal. I get the sense that Luke was hoping we might see that as he penned this story. With a poetic turn, he says the women found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. The angels who appeared by their side suggest they are not going to get what they expected. Why do you seek the living among the dead? The answer to the question would have been simple. They had come with spices and perfumes to a tomb. They weren't looking for someone who was alive, but the angels know that. You're looking for the wrong thing, they say. Could we be looking for the wrong thing too? For those of us who look to Jesus, might we be looking simply for a wise teacher instead of someone whom God has entrusted to carry the very keys of life and death? For those of you who felt obliged to listen to an Easter service, maybe to please someone in your family, is there somewhere else you've been looking to bring life to your marriage, to bring joy to your work, to bring anticipation for the life to come? Could it be that in our desire to keep things normal, we've been overlooking a strange, surprising, life-changing truth that can turn our world upside down for the better? The disciples said nonsense when the woman told them their story. We don't really know if Peter was in that number or not, but assuming he was, their story created just enough curiosity in him to get up and check for himself. Luke concludes the story with this. Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away, wondering to himself what had happened. Don't miss that word, wonder. Scholars have debated about exactly what this means. Did Peter suddenly embrace the resurrection, or did he merely show some curiosity? Perhaps the truth is somewhere in between. Maybe he simply opened his heart to something different than he expected. Maybe he, for the first time, simply questioned his own questions. And perhaps instead of going backward, he took his very first step of faith. In the resurrection, God defies expectations so that we can break expectation and live forward. In the resurrection, God defies expectation so that we can break expectation and live forward. And it can do that for you. As the world returns to normal, are you willing to explore for a moment the possibility of entertaining something a little bit strange that can maybe, just maybe, change your heart, bring hope to your marriage, give you peace at work, or offer you hope for tomorrow? If this resurrection declares to the world that Jesus is who he said he is, could he deliver the promises that he said he would? Could he give us peace even though we continue to have troubles? Could he make our burdens light? Could he help us to love even when we are not loved? Could he offer us friendship when we feel so alone? Could he give us hope when our lives are so short? Maybe full-fledged faith is too big of a step. Maybe you have a certain picture of what it is to be a follower of Jesus in your mind, and that's not for you. I get it. There are so many strange pictures out there of what it means. But instead of focusing on that, what might your life look like if you simply exercised a little curiosity and wonder toward the possibility that God raised Jesus from the dead to give us hope, healing, and a certain and sure promise to come? If you're ready to show a little wonder this Easter, can I invite you to take a step by joining one of our online Alpha courses this year? We'll be joining our strategic partner, Grace Chapel, for a course on asking some of the hard questions of the Christian faith. If you've got unfiltered questions, if you would just like an introduction to what Christianity is all about, or if you'd just like to sit back and silently take it all in, this is for you. You can stop by ccnh.org/alpha to learn about how to sign up. If you've been away from church for a while, maybe now is the time to feed that wonder a little more. We're starting a new sermon series next week over the book of Acts, where we'll be exploring what it means to be a different kind of Christian, especially when it seems there are more and more reasons to be suspicious of the institutional kind. And we would love to have you join us for that too. Or maybe you'd like to start by just picking up the Gospel of Luke and reading it for yourself for the first time or with fresh eyes like it's the first time. Luke was a respected doctor in his day who wrote his gospel like an investigative journalist. Maybe now is the right time for you to pick up the sources and start investigating them yourself. Well, wherever you are at on this journey, there is a place for you. It doesn't have to be the way it used to be. Friends, as comfortable as it is, we don't have to go back to normal. Jesus is offering us life on the other end, an adventure and a promise that he'll be with us as we choose to live forward.